Good morning, everyone. It's 3:30 in the morning. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I'm sure you got other things to do, but you know what? Keep it locked right here because I have some very important issues to bring up. And this is not Democrat, it's not Republican. This is people. And this is people that have been forgotten. I'm not only talking about veterans, but I'm talking about the everyday citizen. Doesn't matter if you're a dog groomer, a teacher, you work at McDonald's, Taco Bell, you work for the FBI, whatever. It doesn't matter what your occupation. This thing affects us all. Men, women, children, the elderly, especially the elderly. So what is this thing that causes us to change our lives from going one moment we're out there living, laughing, joking, working, playing with our kids, playing with our grandchildren, going on trips, working full time, but then suddenly your way of life stops. So what is this? It's called chronic pain. Chronic pain is right now one of the leading causes of life-changing conditions right now in America. And the reason why is because it's being ignored. And I don't mean that it's being ignored as in nobody knows about it. Everyone knows about it. But the problem is that people don't know enough about chronic pain. And there's a lot of stereotyping out there. There's a lot of misinformation that the government and people that don't believe in pain medication are putting out there. So let me give you a little history on how we got here. How did we get to the so-called, putting quotation marks up here with my fingers, how did we get to the so-called opioid epidemic, or how did we get to the opioid crisis? You cannot turn on a single news channel today and not hear that word. Opioid crisis, opiate crisis, overdose, death toll, blah, blah, blah. Overdose on prescription drugs. But before I go back to the future here, prescriptions for pain medications in the last couple of years has dropped by 47%. That includes people with acute chronic pain. That includes people on end of life, also known as hospice. That includes people that are being prepped for surgery. You would probably not believe me if I told you that I personally knew someone who was going in to get brain surgery and they gave him a IV of Tylenol. I'm not joking. And out of all places, it was at the National Institute of Health. So how did this begin? How did we get here? How did we get from a place where doctors, the DEA, the CDC said, you know what? This person is in extreme pain. They're dying of cancer. The only thing that is giving them comfort is oxycodone, OxyContin, Norco, whatever. The only thing that's giving them comfort, but you know what? Let's take it away. Knowing that they will relapse into a very, very painful withdrawal that doesn't just last a couple days, it lasts at least 6 months, maybe longer. It's both physically and mentally daunting. It's your worst nightmare come true. How did we get here where that just seemed like an option? Opioids and opiates, whatever you want to call them, they have been around for thousands of years. They have been mentioned in pop culture such as Game of Thrones, Melko the Poppy. You know, that's a joke, but they used crushed up opioids back then to help people with pain. Now, granted, Game of Thrones is a fantasy world. There was no Seven Kingdoms, but back in that era, people did use it. So for thousands and thousands of years, pain medications were being used to hinder people's pain. and give them some relief. Pain management doesn't stop the pain entirely. It makes it, like it says, manageable pain management. If you can manage your pain, then you can live your life. If your pain is not managed, then you're probably one of those people that's been bedridden, like millions of people are as we speak. And you're probably one of those people that is contemplating suicide, that is thinking about it, that has thought about it, that is thinking that life is over, that cries himself to sleep when they're able to sleep, that is thinking about going and getting medication on the street. You're in desperation. The few people that are able to get pain medication, they live in anxiety every single day because they don't know when it's going to be their turn. And to be clear on that, they don't know when they're going to walk into their monthly appointment at a way, way overbooked clinic and pay hundreds of dollars to see a doctor for about 5 minutes just to get a prescription refill. They don't know when their last day is, because that doctor, even though he may not agree with it, even though that every single ounce of his soul says, this is cruel, this is beyond evil to do this to this person, he is so afraid of getting 20 to 30 years to life. And I'm not even kidding. The DEA has waged war on chronic pain patients. So once again, how did we get here? So let's go back in time to the 1990s. Specifically, probably the mid-90s. Chronic pain is not new, like I've said. It's been around for thousands of years. A company called Purdue Pharmaceuticals came out with a drug called OxyContin ER. ER stands for extended release. What this drug did is that you would take one every 4 to 8 hours, depending on your metabolism. Sometimes people say it works for 8 hours, sometimes people say it works for 12, but most people it probably works around depending on your pain. See, that's another thing. Everyone is different, so it may work for you for 5, 13, 14, whatever, based on your pain, your metabolism, your DNA. I mean, there's lots of things. If you have a genetic mutation, everyone is different. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But so this drug was created so that people didn't have to keep an entire bottle of pills in their car or at their home. They could just have, say, I don't know, 30 pills on them, and that would last them the whole month. Now, I'm just throwing out that number as an example, but you get what I mean. They wouldn't have to take like 100 pills every day. So this medication was working very well. And then let's go into the future, into about 1998. Purdue Pharmaceuticals came out and said, we have proof that this drug is only 2% addictive. Now, I do have an opinion about this. If you're taking pain medication, and regardless of what your doctor says, he said that it's not addictive, you should know, if you have common sense, that if you're taking an opiate, you're going to get chemically dependent on it. That doesn't mean you're an addict. It doesn't mean you want to get high. But if you drink caffeine in the morning and you drink it enough and then you stop, you're going to go through a withdrawal. You may not be drinking caffeine to get high. Caffeine is naturally in coffee. Maybe you like the taste of coffee. But like most medications and most things that have a quote-unquote drug in them, there are some withdrawal side effects. But unfortunately, with pain medication, because it's an opiate, the withdrawal side effects are so bad that that's where the problem presents itself. So I'm kind of skipping ahead, but I'm really trying to emphasize this point of how people get caught up in this thing. So basically what had happened is Purdue Pharmaceuticals lied to the doctors and said, hey, you know what? This is only 2% addictive. So about, you know, most of your patients will be able to just stop at cold turkey and have no problems doing it. Well, I don't know where these doctors went to med school, but I would think that common sense would dictate that, hey, this is an opiate. That's probably not true. But I digress. Moving forward, we're in the 2000s, the early 2000s. The people that were prescribed this medication, some of them felt a euphoric feelings. Some of them, maybe it bridged a gap in their brain circuits and it helped them feel maybe less depressed, or maybe it was managing other pains that they had, maybe emotional, maybe physical. Opiates are a drug. And regardless if you're using it for what it's intended for or not, you're still going to get physically addictive. That just will happen. So when this started happening, and doctors started seeing that they're just getting patients and patients and patients, people just pouring into their doors saying, oh, you know, I smashed my thumb. People were coming in with injuries that they would actually make so they could get this drug. Because to be honest, the people that, and now there's two types of people. You actually have to have that addictive gene in your body. Excuse me. You actually have to have that addictive gene in your body to become mentally addicted on it. Now, there's a difference between dependent and chemically addicted and then psychologically addicted. People that use opioids to crush up on their table and snort in their nose are not only chemically addicted, but they're mentally addicted, and they enjoy the euphoric feeling. They enjoy getting high. Me personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think we got far bigger problems. And the only reason that this becomes a problem is because they're cut off. If they were given what they wanted, I'm sorry, but the truth is, they wouldn't go to the streets for heroin. They wouldn't have to go and buy, you know, maybe safe or unsafe medications on the street today. And did you know that it's $1 per milligram, according to the streetmenu.org, I think it's called. Yeah, $1 per milligram on the street for pain medication because of how rare it is today. I mean, you have an endless supply of the fake medication, which is basically fentanyl. So that's how we lose about 300 people a day here in Phoenix, Arizona. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. There's so much here to cover, guys. So what had happened is that people started saying, okay, I got cut off from this doctor, so I'm going to go doctor shopping, because people were getting chemically addicted. And like I said, the withdrawal side effects are so bad that nobody really wanted to quit. And at the time, we didn't have any programs designated to help people quit. And to be honest, we still don't have these types of programs. I had a friend that tried to quit taking opiates, and she couldn't do it because the program that they had for her was for alcoholics. I think that the government has spent so much time on attacking doctors and chronic pain patients that the people that actually have an issue with these drugs and abuse them, they haven't set up any sort of program for them or done the science to help them withdraw in a safe manner. Because if you cold turkey someone off of an opiate, there's things like stroke, there's massive anxiety, physical, mental pain, thoughts of suicide, uncontrolled restless leg syndrome. That's a real thing, and I've seen it happen. I've seen people. Have you seen the movie Basketball Diaries? Go watch that movie, and it's like watching somebody go off of heroin, because it's basically the same thing when you put it next. The withdrawal side effects are exactly the same thing. So, but at the end of the day, if it's like, hey, should we give this, you know, 80-year-old woman more pain medication so she doesn't withdraw and we can keep her comfortable because she's dying of cancer and her body is liquefying inside? Or because of social issues, do we just take her off it just to say, oh, well, we achieved something? There's a lot of similarities between the opiate argument and the gun control argument, and I'll get to that in a moment, too. So by 2005, the DEA started taking notice, and they came up with the national check system, much like the check system you have for firearms. You can't just go gun shopping all around. If you got denied at one place, you'll get caught. So they came up with the thing that if you got denied at one doctor, you wouldn't be able to go and get your script filled another. Now things pretty much electronic. You go to your appointment and you get your medication. It is sent electronically to the pharmacy, and you usually have a prescription every 30 days, every 28 to 30 days. and it varies on the pharmacy. Some pharmacies, they have a policy where they'll fill it 38 days, some of them fill it 30 days, some of them fill it every 3 months. Those are so rare though. Unless you're like a Hollywood star or an actor or somebody very, very wealthy, then you can get a personal doctor and have those done. But there's just so much to say about this, and I'm sorry, I keep kind of losing track, but so anyways, they hindered all the doctor shopping because they showed this documentary of this guy who went in, got literally a script of OxyContin, and then he went to the next doctor and he got a script of oxycodone. And I'm going to say something that's controversial, but I wish that that was still available. Because for the people that truly need it right now, that would be amazing. They wouldn't have to drive 5 hours out of the way to another state to go and get their pain medication. And yes, that is a thing too. So let's fast forward to 2016. The CDC came out with the MME. What does MME stand for? It stands for morphine milligram equivalency. Now, for some reason, the CDC takes all opioids and they compare them to morphine because morphine is the least powerful of the painkillers, so I guess they use that as their example. Doesn't make sense, but whatever. The DEA doesn't make sense. Neither does the CDC. And instead of having chronic pain specialists, instead of having like actual people who know what they're doing, do you know who created the MME? Addiction specialists. Yeah, they did not have people that knew what they were doing. They had people that viewed everyone as an addict or a junkie, write these laws for people that are literally suffering. And that just blows my mind. So moving on. The MME came out and it wasn't law. I repeat, it was not a law. It was a suggestion for people who came in and had a slight injury, either post or pre-op, you know, because normal people that have, and I'm not saying that people with chronic pain are not normal, but the normal injury most of the time, unless it's severe, you know, say you need stitches or something like that, or you break your ankle or you break your arm, you'll probably come back at around 99%. You'll have some pain before and some pain after, but most of the time you'll heal and your pain will go away. That is what the MME was originally intended to do, was just to be a suggestion. Hey, doctors, this is what we suggest. God knows why the CDC has any business messing around in medications, but that's just what they do these days. I guess they gave up, you know, the hunt for malaria and COVID and went straight to the medications. So, yeah, the CDC got bored. So after that, these MMEs, the 90 milligrams a day, and when I say 90 milligrams a day, that doesn't matter if you're recovering or not recovering. That doesn't matter if you're on hospice. That doesn't matter if you are literally a paraplegic and it feels like you're on fire. Doesn't matter if you were blown up in a Humvee and you have shrapnel in your back and it feels like your back is just getting cut up by swords. Doesn't matter. Everyone, according to the CDC, everyone is the same. And according to the DEA, everyone is the same. We all share the same body parts. We all share the same DNA, the same tolerance, the same metabolism. So why on earth would somebody need 100 milligrams? Why on earth would somebody need 110, 115, 120? You know where I'm going with this. Why would somebody need a specifically tailored medication program? One size fits all. And the way they did it is like, well, you know what? Everyone can drink the same type of alcohol and have the same reaction. Everyone needs the same amount of insulin that's a diabetic. No, people are different. But according to the DEA and the CDC, 90 milligrams for all, no more, no less. Well, maybe a lot less, but no more than that. And doctors who were either at the time, here's the other thing that changed. You used to be able to have that awesome relationship with your primary care physician, and he would prescribe your medication. The DEA put a stop to that, and they made it so people that were in the hospice system, in basically treating cancer patients, pain management clinics were now in charge of regulating who gets what and medication refills and all this stuff. Chronic pain and pain management centers. Pain management centers are only designed to see maybe 100 patients. They have these places bombarded with thousands of patients. And the reason is because the DEA was worried that they may have too much of a friendly relationship with their personal doctor. So they made it very strict in that patients can only get pain medication, whatever that is, through a chronic pain management clinic. So they just overloaded the system. Now there's problems with people getting their medication, even if it's a legitimate prescription, which in 99.9999999999 cases, they are. I've never actually seen an illegitimate prescription being written anymore, because it doesn't happen, because it's all electronical. And I'm sure there are a few doctors way out there on Mars, maybe one or two, that will be like, hey, slip me a couple hundred bucks, I'll slip you some extra meds or something. But it's not like it used to be. What people are hearing on movies like Dope Sick and these documentaries and Addicted America and Painkiller and all these books that are being written by all these people that are so-called experts and doctors like Andrew Kolodny, it's complete garbage. So fast forward to 2020. Chronic pain patients could not get in to get their medication because of the pandemic. Most places closed up, and then finally the DEA said, okay, you can do telemed over the phone via Zoom or telephone calls, whatever, which they should have done in the first place. I shouldn't have to pay $300 to go in and get my medication refilled. It doesn't make any sense. And maybe once a month, sure, but it's a money-making scheme now because they know that people are unfortunately put in this position, but hey, don't get me started on that. So, also, many insurance companies won't take them. If you have, Blue Cross or Blue Shield, any stuff like that, they won't give you pain medication. They will deny it for social outcry. Oh, we're doing our part in fighting the opioid epidemic. So, during this issue, you had all these people that are going through terrible withdrawals, even people that are on hospice. I can't imagine what that would be like. I just feel so bad for these people. It really breaks my heart because I have a friend who is going through hospice, and they gave him brain surgery on Tylenol, post-op and pre-op. This is absolutely ludicrous. It makes no sense. It's like my mother said when I told her about this. They said that they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You have a scratch on your car, you might as well destroy the whole car instead of buffing that scratch out. And what I mean by that is that, yes, there are people that abuse pain medication. Absolutely. I'm not dumb to that. But what pain medication? If you go on the streets in Phoenix, Arizona, or any metropolitan city, the chances of you finding real pain medication are pretty much zero. So why do I say that? Well, the DEA in 2017 ordered that prescription pain medication be halted in the production by about 53%, prescriptions down 46%, and then also the amount of people that can get them prescribed. You better be on fire walking in and losing limbs and just having like a giant machete sticking out of your neck. Even then, you know what? You may not still even get them. I'm not even joking. I know somebody who has 6 tumors in his brain. He's had 6 brain surgeries. He has tumors in his spinal cord. His kidneys are shot. His liver's shot. The man is in serious pain. And they wanted to give him antidepressants for his pain. This is what's going on in society right now. This is real. This is happening. And people are being fed. The American public, your average American viewer, will listen to Fox News or they'll listen to CNN And they'll be like, meanwhile, the opioid epidemic has taken another victim. Little Timmy went to a party and he took a 30 milligram pill, and later he was pronounced dead after overdosing. What they didn't say is that little Timmy went to the party and he took an illicit counterfeit pill. So what is that? What's an illicit counterfeit pill? Well, when the DEA ordered the massive, massive cut of production of real pain medication, less prescription, less real pain medication floating around on the black market. So who decided to take notice? Give you a guess. The cartel. Yep. The cartel said, hey, I think we got something here. Marijuana's been legalized, but yet you have this entire group of people that are just desperately needing this medication. And even though that the drug cartels could not provide the real thing, they didn't care. It's not like they're the March of Dimes. You know, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. So what they did is they got the dye, the cast, and they got the right color for the most part, and they started creating fake 30 milligram oxycodone pills. One side is stamped M with a little square box around it, and the other side is stamped 30. And the reason I'm telling you this is because if you're one of the people that I'm talking about that is suffering right now, no matter how bad it gets, never get anything off the street, because chances of it being real are about zero to none. And I don't want to see you get hurt. The cartel doesn't care. They like people dying because it shows that their stuff is strong. It is packed with fentanyl, amphetamines, heroin, you name it. I knew somebody who actually was taking those nonstop. The guys tried to stop and he went into a seizure. He almost died. This stuff is dangerous. It's deadly. And a lot of people are dying. But the news does not say that. The news is constantly acting like little Timmy got into his mom's purse and he stole some Vicodin when she had her ankle surgery or something. The amount of real pain medication on the street that's still left out there, there's probably maybe 50 rolling around out there. And I'm just using that as an example to show you or to tell you how many fake ones versus legitimate ones. Even the DEA said that regardless of how much slashing of prescriptions and pain medication production, the amount of overdoses has skyrocketed. Oh, gee, I wonder why that is, geniuses. You guys have destroyed people's lives, and still thousands of people are dying per day. And it's not just in Phoenix, it's in California. It's hitting my hometown of Ventura County. It's hit in New York, and they're not just using the fake pain medication stuff. They're using stuff like Ativan, anti-anxiety medications, or they're using stuff like, the other Xanax stuff, I don't know what it's called, but they're doing it in all forms because that's what people want. And so you have two groups of people that are trying to get this. You have the people that are suffering, chronic pain patients, and then you have the people that are drug addicts and they have a substance problem. But in the past, if they were taking real pain medication and they were abusing real pain medication, you could get them treatment. Well, now it's a little hard to give somebody treatment when you're going to be buried on Friday. So, you know, and that's no laughing matter, but that's just basically the reality of it. You can't get Timmy treatment if he's getting buried the next day. So two people are suffering here. The legitimate chronic pain patients, the people on hospice, and those who abuse the medication. And it's just, it's really sad. It's awful what's happening. And then recently, I'm chewing one of those Crunchable Lifesavers. Pretty good. Recently, a movie with Michael Keaton Don't get me wrong, I love Michael Keaton. Guy's an amazing actor. This movie came out and it's called Dopesick. And it was written by Beth Macy, who's very anti-pain medication. And this movie dropped on Hulu. I believe it's spliced up into a couple of episodes. So, let's take a listen, shall we?
I know most people don't think about us up there in the mountains. Many of my patients are miners. It's dangerous work, and they carry the burden of building this nation on their backs. They're in pain. These people, my people, trusted me. I can't believe how many of them are dead now. We've begun looking at something that could be big.
OxyContin.
Purdue Pharma, they've been marketing the drug as something that's not addictive, when it clearly is.
All your doctors are going to be asking, how is this even possible? Your most effective talking point are these magic words.
Less than 1%.
They told me that less than 1% would become addicted.
If OxyContin does what I think it can, it could soon become Purdue's first billion-dollar drug.
Purdue continues to lie about the drug's safety to doctors, to patients, and the FDA. We have a major case here.
Addiction rates, overdoses, and crime are on the rise across the country because of this drug.
I think maybe the medicine might be just a tad more addictive than you said.
I can't live like this anymore.
Our community is ground zero for a national catastrophe.
Purdue will not move unless we punch hard.
These people want to be addicted.
I want top executives to feel some pain.
It's crucial they understand we've created the greatest painkiller in the history of human civilization.
Now, to tell you the truth, it sounds like a really exciting movie, and I'm not going to lie, you know, I have no love for these pharmaceutical companies. They do some pretty heinous stuff, but they provide a product. Now, was it right of them to lie to doctors? No. But at the end of the day, if you're prescribing somebody an opiate, and yet somebody tells you it's not addictive, what are you, born yesterday? Non-addictive and opiate don't go in the same sentence. That's like saying that, you know what? I may take this knife and slice my arm, but there's a small chance that I won't get cut. Okay, but usually if you put a blade anywhere near skin, it's gonna cut you, right? I don't care what the hell you say. That's just common sense. So anyways, this movie was released. It was a book written by Beth Macy, who extremely hates me now because I told her about my story. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I'm one of those chronic pain patients. I can't remember how many times I've gone through withdrawals for no reason other than my doctor dropped me because they were scared of the DEA, or my back was hurting me so bad that I was literally crying myself to sleep on the fourth day. I'm not even kidding. I was crying myself to sleep. And the only reason I went to sleep is because of sheer mental and physical exhaustion. And I barely sleep. I have bags around my eyes. I look terrible. I used to go to the gym. I used to participate in shooting competitions. I was in the Coast Guard. I worked with law enforcement. I used to have a very active life. And when I had my injury, that changed. But you know what? for the first 6 years, it was fine because I had pain medication and I was managing my pain until the DEA and the CDC became enemy number one. So then this movie Dope Sick comes out. You have Michael Keaton, you have Rosario Dawson, Peter Sarsgaard, I think. I know there's Alexander Sarsgaard, there's a lot of Sarsgaards. It's got a great cast, but unfortunately it's coming out at the wrong time. If chronic pain patients were able to get the pain medication that they needed in order just to live a basic life, I'm not saying that I need to enter into Mr. Olympian, but I want to be able to go down to the mailbox and get my mail without feeling that my lower back's going to explode. Every morning I wake up, it takes me about 3 hours to get out of bed. And this may be TMI, but it takes me about an hour to at least sit down on the toilet. Because I have to sit there and kind of draw out a schematic on how I'm going to sit down and how I'm going to get up. And if my back really, really, really hurts, you know what? I can make a choice. Either I take enough medication to actually make a difference, or at the end of the month, I run out early. And then if I call and ask my doctor and say, hey, you know what? I had some really, really bad pain. I didn't know what to do, so I had to take a little bit of extra, especially since I've been on this pain medication for about 10 years. You do build a tolerance to it. Now, like I said, I'm not one of those people that, you know, likes to get high or whatever. You know, I guess there's some people that do. And even those people shouldn't be punished. But at the end of the day, I'm getting punished for what other people are doing. And that's, like I said, how earlier when I said it's a lot like the gun control debate. Because of what somebody did in 2012 with an AR-15, they're going after my gun. I'm the one to blame, even though I haven't done anything and I've always been a responsible gun owner. I don't ever want anyone to overdose. But punishing people who are at the end of their life, who are getting surgery, who have breast cancer, who have brain tumors, who have four of their discs completely torn, that have chronic regional pain simplex, punishing those people is not the answer to stop overdose. Obviously, the science says it right now, the stats. When you slash the production of pain medication by 57% and prescriptions by 46%, and people are overdosing in record numbers, maybe your approach is wrong. Maybe this is not the way we should do it. If somebody is truly in pain and they're desperate, they will find a way to get what they feel they need. And if they're turned away at a safe and legal place, then what option does that leave them? I found an episode where on Fox, and this lady was interviewing this wife who had recently lost her husband. He was in a car accident. He had major back issues, and I guess it was so bad where he kept on getting cut off by his doctor. He had to go from doctor to doctor. They traveled 5 hours out of state, and he said, I'm getting tired of this. I got cut off again. And again, let me make this clear. They're not abusing their pain medication, but doctors are terrified of losing their medical license because of the DEA. And if the DEA would back off, then nobody would have a problem and people would get their lives back again. But because this doctor straight up cold turkeyed this guy, he went through hell for months and he couldn't take it anymore. He was done and he told his wife, you know what, honey, I love you, but I can't live like this anymore. And this is, this hits close to home because I've known some people like this. And he said, you know what, I can't do this. I love you, but I cannot do this. And that just shows you how desperate someone is to make it stop, to control their pain, that they would make a plan to go to the park, recite their wedding vows. And he shot himself in the chest with a .38 revolver as he held his wife's hand. That's not an isolated incident. That happens way more than they show. But constantly, they are pushing this stuff out, telling people that, oh, you know what? unfortunately, there's all these prescriptions going out and it's overdosing people left and right. What prescriptions? What prescriptions? There is no prescriptions, no new prescriptions going out. It is so hard to get pain medication in 2021, unless you're a rock star, or unless you're a politician or a movie star. Good luck. You're not getting it. So most of these people, they go to the street and then they find something that kills them. So no matter which way the bottle spins, you're screwed. And this could change if doctors stopped getting arrested for being compassionate and if the DEA and the CDC would stop making decisions for chronic pain patients and their lives. It used to be that you had a patient and a doctor inside the exam room. Now you have the patient, the DEA, and you had the CDC. I'm sorry, I'm a little tired. It used to be that it was just you and the doctor in the exam room. Now you have the DEA, the CDC, you and the doctor. There should be no outside influences. Unless that doctor is prescribing you like 2,600 pills in 1 month, there's no reason why this person should receive the amount of medication that they need, because like I said, everyone is different. Nobody is the same. Nobody is the same. No fingerprints are the same. No metabolism is the same. We are all different on how we react to medication. So I made a little petition to cancel, and I hate to be the cancel culture guy, but I think that this show is doing way more harm than good. I said that to cancel Dope Sick until pain patients get medical freedom. And like I said, I hate the cancel culture, but this is not really so much as it is a cancel culture as it is that this is setting any sort of legislative action that we've done. This is setting us back years. Because right now we have a great lady named Claudia Morandi, who is fighting on behalf of chronic pain patients, and she is just fighting tooth and nail to make it so that chronic pain patients are safe from these insane regulations. And here's another thing that's crazy. So as a chronic pain patient, I'm exempted from the MME. And I went in and I brought this paper to my doctor. And I said, hey, I found this. I'm exempted. And I thought that maybe he already knew this, but, you know, hey, sometimes people get busy. And he said, no, I understand that. And yes, you are. But he's like, if I start prescribing to you what you should probably be on, which is a short-acting and a long-acting and then probably an anti-anxiety medication. Oh, that's another thing I forgot to mention. So now, because of all these crazy things called black box rules, whatever they call it, if you have really bad social anxiety, but you're also suffering of chronic pain, you need to pick between your mental health or your physical health. And they're very closely related, because if your anxiety is up really high, your pain goes up because you're more sensitive. All this stuff is connected, and that's what they don't understand either. So if you're on pain medication, good luck trying to handle that panic attack. You're pretty much SOL there too. I mean, I'm not kidding. They have really thrown people to the wolves on this. They don't care. These politicians would rather stand up and say, oh, you know, I did everything I could to curb the opioid crisis. No, you did everything you could to make people want to go home and blow their brains out or go look at black tar heroin. And I guarantee you that if tomorrow they totally stopped the production of pain medication, we would have the worst fentanyl epidemic that anyone has ever seen in history. It would be like a plague. It would wipe people out so much. And I'm hoping they don't do that. But there are some people that want it. Like the people... I spoke to one of the people on that Dope Sick Facebook webpage. And I said, you know what? I'm sure this movie is well intended, but it's the wrong time to bring this up, because right now we are fighting for justice when it comes for chronic pain patients. And this person said, I lost my daughter to an overdose, And, you know, what do you say to that? So I tried to say the best I could, and I said, you know, I'm terribly sorry about your daughter. I can't imagine what it's like to lose a child. I'm not a parent, but you have my deepest condolences, and I'm so sorry for your loss. And I said, but there's another side of this coin. I said, other people are taking their lives, and they're overdosing because they are being told no, they can't get their pain medication. So that makes somebody want to kill themselves or search in the illegitimate markets. So all the government did was create a black market, and they gave the drug cartels a huge pay raise. I don't know what to do, guys. I mean, people are continue to fight, but this, we've been fighting for such a long time, and we've lost so many people, and I don't know what to do anymore. I'm worried about the day, like I said earlier, where I'll get that call and, hey, you know what? I'm sorry, I got to force taper you down to 30 a week. I'm sorry, 30 a day. For some people, that's checkout time, but I guess we'll have to see. I know that I'm a fighter, and I'll fight as long as I can. But there are some days where I'm like, could I do this without the little pain medication that I get? I often wonder, but let's hope that logic and science prevails, and, you know, the DEA finally gets hit with a fly swatter. So, but, you know, if you don't believe this, feel free to go and look this up for yourself, because this is real. People are really suffering from this, and I understand that there was a point in time where we definitely prescribed these medications way too loosely. I will agree with that. We shouldn't have done what we did. But now, the pendulum has swung way too far on the other side, and you have people that are literally suffering, and they are dying by the hundreds, by the thousands. And the thing is that they don't need to. And the people that abuse it, we can get treatment for them. And that's going to take some work too. But anyways, guys, I know this was kind of a long one, but if you or you know someone who is suffering from chronic pain and they are not being treated right, or they need somebody to be an advocate, if you're a resident of Arizona, go to Don't Punish Pain Rally on Facebook, or get in contact with a very nice lady named Claudia Mirandi. She's based out of Rhode Island. She's a former, I think, attorney. And she's a chronic pain patient. She, I believe, was diagnosed with lupus, and she went through some very bad pain, and she was put in the same boat as all of us. So she's fighting hard. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to take some of these lawmakers to know someone, or to have maybe even be themselves, where they need to get some sort of pain management, and they can't get it. Maybe that's what it will take, but who knows? All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. I greatly appreciate it. This was probably one of the most passionate and the most serious podcasts that I've ever done. And I wanted to make sure that I got everything covered. So if I left anything out, and you know, feel free to leave me a comment. All right. And I hope you all have a great Halloween. I might drop another podcast here before then. But if you got small kids, or if you got black cats, keep them indoors, because people are evil and crazy sometimes. And if you got kids, make sure you check through their candy. You never know what psychos do these days. But at the end of the day, have fun. You know what? We're all over this pandemic crap. So go out there, trick or treat, you know, have a good time with your loved ones. We got the holidays coming up. I'm going to go visit my parents. You know, wish I could go visit my grandparents. But fortunately, my grandpa and grandma, they're no longer with me. So kids, if you got any younger kids, make sure they go over to grandpa and grandma's house and get judged for their Halloween costume. Maybe we'll get extra candy, because grandparents are awesome like that. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Have a great morning. Have a great afternoon and a great evening. Good night.